Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a long overdue Red and White Corporate Podcast. It's been a while. We've been busy, but we are back. And it's me, Cormac, with my good friend, Taylor. Taylor, how are we doing?
I'd be lying if I said it was okay.
It's been an eventful few weeks in the football world, and we've missed a lot, mainly negative stuff, shock, about Man United to talk about. But strap in, this could be quite a long one, because we're going to do a bit of a season summary, a bit of a Europa League final summary, which that could be, or prepare for a Taylor special. And then we're going to kind of look ahead of the summer and kind of what else we've got going on. So this is going to be basically the last 3 weeks and forward, summarised very quickly. So kind of settle in. This could be quite a long one. But to start things off, I think we're going to do kind of a mini awards for this past season in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a few noted down here. It's kind of what they do on Sky, basically, just the awards. But
yeah, well, I think firstly, before we go into the awards, we'll just touch on the fact that the Prem now is over.
It is officially over.
And the table has now been finalised. And frankly, it was kind of, do you not think it was gearing up for something which could have been a bit more interesting, and actually it turned out to be probably what everyone expected?
I think so. It was like, obviously the last day, the interesting thing was who's going to get top five.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being City, Newcastle, Chelsea, which if I had to pick three to finish, that's probably the most boring three. Because I'm glad Newcastle got in, because I think I like them in the Champions League. I would have loved, obviously, Forest really kind of just completely capitulated towards the end of the season.
But then I was thinking about this. If Forest had gone into the Champions League, that would have been brilliant. Really fun. Team no one would have expected. But they actually probably have a really good chance of doing quite well in the Europa League.
That is true. I mean, they obviously, they're conference, aren't they? Because Villa are Europa, so they're conference.
Oh, they compete even so better. They have even more of a chance to go really far, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The other teams which are qualified in the other European leagues, I think it's Rayo Vallecano in Spain. It's I don't even know who it is. Might be Bologna in Italy. Could be completely wrong on that. Start off really strong and just go completely off base.
Spreading misinformation.
But Forest actually probably have a really good chance of doing really well, which, you know, if the end of next season they've got to a European final,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden I don't think they're really as bothered about getting.
No, I think so.
And
I mean,
I don't think they'll continue. I don't think they'll get top seven next season. So this could be a way, if they really focus on the Conference League, to get into Europa League the following year and have that period of sustained European football, which
I think they'll struggle with Thursday nights, obviously. It will be difficult, but I think they're
going to sign another 1,000 players. I know,
so they've got the money to spend, mm-hmm. so they'll bring in some reinforcements. But yeah, so that was a bit of a shame. But also, if you told Forest fans, you know, you're going to finish 7th this season, or 8th, sorry, they're going to finish in the end, they would have bit your hand off.
Come on,
they,
man.
You know, even though their owner is a fucking psychopath. But special mention to Nuno, because he's done a great job. Even though they did fall apart the last kind of 10 games, they did fall apart. It's brutal. But, you know, they fell off.
Brutal, Cormac. Yeah. Cormac is back. He is feeling brutal.
Fell apart. Useless club.
He is ready to stab the knife in everywhere. No.
Speaking of clubs I'd like to stab the knife into, Chelsea, they did get the top 4 because they beat Forest on that final day, 1-0. I mean, they did well, Chelsea, to the kind of last few games to kind of grind out results. They did drop points, didn't they, the week before?
Well, they managed to beat Liverpool, they beat Manchester United, games where they maybe wouldn't have expected to have got the result. Jokingly, as I say, Manchester United finished in 15th place. Of course, they expected
that's a
win to be us. It's humongous. Yeah, it's ginormous. And they managed to pick up some really important results after really falling off post-Christmas. So To sustain that last few weeks for Chelsea and get over the line, even after Nicholas Jackson stupidly got sent off and left them with no striker for the final few games, it's credit to Enzo Maresca.
And that was the aim, wasn't it, at the beginning of the season for Chelsea? It was get Champions League football.
Yeah.
And they've done it.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can really... And they also won the conference as well, which we'll come on to a little bit later. Mm-hmm.
So
that was a bit of a success.
It finished exactly how I probably would have anticipated. But the funniest thing about it is all Villa had to do was beat the worst Manchester United team of all time.
And they ended up losing 2-0.
And they ended up losing 2-0. But you know what's even funnier? They scored a completely legitimate goal.
Oh my God.
Do you want to talk about that? What was your thoughts
on
that?
Everyone's probably bored of this now because it is kind of old news. But yeah, so if you guys do remember, basically the Manchester United keeper who wasn't Onana, Taylor, you're going to tell me his name now.
Bayindir.
There you go. He went up to collect the ball and Morgan Rogers, in the referee's eyes, knocked the balls out of his hand. went on to score, but the referee had already blown the whistle. Looking back, the keeper did not have control of the ball at all. Mm. And the referee kind of just blew because he probably, it looks like a foul. Like in the referee's defense, but in the back of that would have made it 1-0 Villa.
Mm-hmm.
And on the back of that, because Villa dropped points, didn't finish with Champions League football, didn't.
But the thing is, if they had beat Manchester United, they would have, because it wasn't in their hands anyway, but Newcastle lost to Everton. It's just that they could have. And all they had to do was beat us, which every other team in the league seems to have done this season. And they just weren't able to. On the ref, though, a lot of grief was given to the ref. And I actually think this has been of an overlooked point on the ref, in that he only refed 11 Premier League games this season. Firstly, a bit of a questionable decision to pick him for a match which actually had some jeopardy.
Sure.
Plenty of games didn't. But he also has refed a lot of games in the Championship this season alongside the Premier League. And in the Championship, they obviously don't have VAR. Their prerogative is to not blow the whistle.
Exactly.
So he is mentally trained to, if he sees an infringement, he will blow the whistle. He's not been trained enough, as much as the established Premier League refs would have been, to hold, wait, and then see how it develops. And
for
then,
those kind of things as well, blowing the whistle is usually a fairly safe bet, because they tend to, like, the keepers get protected like crazy, obviously.
Obviously, you didn't get the memo that Manchester United's goalkeepers drink the Bozo water from the tap and can't catch
from
a ball.
The fountain of Bozo.
Shout out Bayern here, by the way, for managing to fumble a very slow-moving ball. I just love this team.
It was an absolute disaster. Yeah, I know. I felt bad for the ref. And I think Villa's reaction, to be honest, was a little bit over the top.
Look,
if this was a cup game, I'd understand the frustration. But over 38 games, unfortunately, you weren't good enough.
And if you couldn't beat this, to be honest, they weren't even looking like they were going to beat us anyway.
Man United look all right.
If you're making us look good post Europa League final, then you don't deserve nothing, mate. So they got exactly what they deserve.
Yeah.
And it now looks like, because they're one of those clubs which desperately needed the Champions League money, and now they're definitely going to have to sell a player or two, which is crazy to think, because they sold John Duran. They sold Diaby last summer to Saudi as well. And they've made some huge sales, and I still can't believe...
Is that confirmed? Is it they're going to have to get a bit
of... Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, they are... Their wage turnover ratio to their revenue is PSR red flags everywhere.
Right, okay.
So they're going to... They'll be selling one which... I'll just mention this now. I know it's not the transfer section, but I might forget. Is that their Boubacar Kamara? He's in the final year of his contract at Villa, and I think he's one of the best CDMs in the Premier League. They got him on a free transfer from Marseille a couple of years ago. He obviously broke or did his ACL or had a horrific injury which took him out. But when he's now been fit and he's had such a good season, he's got 1 year left in his contract. I would imagine he might be going for 15 to 20 million. And that should be the type of transfer that Manchester United should be all over.
They have to be all over.
But they won't be, because we have no pulling power. We have nothing going for us. I wouldn't join us if I was someone of any kind of ill.
Yeah.
I would just go literally anywhere else and be like, I ain't touching that with the barge pole.
Yeah. But we'll come back on to United in a minute. Taylor's getting excited.
No, I'm not.
There's 3 weeks worth of Man United frustration that needs to come out, which I don't really blame him. But yeah, Villa, Shane, get over it. Europa League, I think, you know what? I don't think it's a disaster.
Now,
because
again,
it's a competition. They'll have a good opportunity to do very well. They did great in the Champions League this year.
Yep.
So I think they'll be probably what... I mean, all the Premier League teams tend to be the favourites going into these kind of second and third tier European competitions. So I think it's by no means is it a bad season for Villa.
Yep.
But it's just... It is. I understand
this
the frustration.
This is they're going into the Unai Emery Cup.
They are. That's such a good point as well. Yeah, so that's it.
This
so
should be their bag.
This will be their bag, exactly.
Villa fans will have a great time on the European aways, going to some really rogue, random places, and also going to some really nice places.
Exactly.
You know, it's a really good competition to be in, so it's not all doom and gloom.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they'll have a great time. And then Newcastle obviously get that Champions League, which I think is pretty huge for them.
They can spend.
And what a year they've had, Newcastle. What a year they've had. Because I think they're a little bit of a slow start.
They've had a slow burning season, which has kind of really hit pure fire by the end of a few months. It all kind of... It's funny, isn't it? Teams can win a trophy in the middle of the season and it can almost stunt their momentum and they can take their foot off the gas a little bit. But they've kind of bucked the trend in that they won the Carabao Cup back in February and it seems to have just driven them on. They've just had this new sense of confidence and belief and... They've managed to have a really strong end to the season. They've kind of built that fear factor up now. And I think everyone's really looking at that team and thinking, wow, that midfield's probably top three midfields in the league.
Quick mention to Tonali, who I never really rated. When he first signed for Newcastle, I was very much like, he's a fine player, but he's not
I didn't know what type of player he was, to be honest. Yeah, I think everyone misprofiled him. I think because he has the long black hair and he looks all Italian. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, he's some kind of Andrea Pirlo regen. He's absolutely not. The bro doesn't stop running.
He's
such a workhorse. He's so technically sound.
He's probably the best. This season, he's been probably one of the best defensive midfielders.
Yeah.
Him and Class Rice as a defensive midfielder have kind of been the two standouts,
He's
really
been fantastic. He's what a clever buy from Newcastle, by the way. Buy. They bought him when they hadn't
two
even...
2 years ago, was it?
Yeah, when they hadn't even got Champions League yet. And obviously, I know he had all the issues off the field.
Well, the man loves to gamble. I can respect that.
Yeah, man. He's probably got one hell of a bet put on Newcastle finishing in the top five this season. So he's probably quids in right now. And he's very happy about it.
Yeah, good on him.
So, he's had a great season. Him alongside Bruno Guimarães and
Joe Linton
is a pretty formidable
midfield.
Scary midfield, man. It's
very tough.
Well planned. Yeah. And it'll be... It's funny, Newcastle have just announced the departure of their second sporting director in the space of a year, and Paul Mitchell has announced that he is leaving, which has come actually as a bit of a surprise because he obviously came in to replace Dan Ashworth after he left to join Manchester United, and that obviously went really well for us also. But he came in, and I think he, again, struggled with the... Because Eddie Howe has built up such good rapport with the fans, with the board. I think any sporting director that's coming in isn't essentially an Eddie Howe man, because he wasn't, and apparently he's a bit of a straight talker, straight to the point. He has his own mind, he has his own way of thinking, and I think the relationship, albeit was okay, was never something moving forward which they probably imagined it could be. And he's announced his departure now, which means that Eddie Howe, actually, until they get someone to fill that role, will be the full essentially sporting director for the team for the summer until they get someone in.
Wow.
So it's going to be his transfer targets that they're bringing in. And I would anticipate Newcastle moving pretty quickly in the transfer window, try and get some of these big targets in. We'll talk about who I think will probably go in a bit. But
yeah,
it's
a bit of a
it's interesting
section.
That they've lost their second sporting director in the space of a year. But it seems like Eddie Howe has just got such a foothold. It seems to be very traditional in that the manager seems to do it all there.
Yeah.
And it's funny, isn't it? Because he was seen originally as a stopgap once the ownership took
That's
over.
It.
And they were very much, let's get someone in steady who's going to, not make us any worse, potentially make us better, and then we can move on to that superstar coach in due course. But actually, football's a funny game, and he's now looking elite. Mm-hmm. He's looking like an elite manager. He's got an elite team around him, and they are managing to get something out of this Newcastle team, which no one would have thought when they first came in. So kudos to him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and he obviously was ill a couple of weeks ago with pneumonia, so it's good to see him okay. And I'm sure he'll be very happy with the end of the season Newcastle have had, and they won a trophy. So that's huge.
I think what a great season for Newcastle.
Top four in a trophy.
Yeah, and as much as we banter with Newcastle fans on the online spaces, I am happy for them, and I think I just do like Newcastle.
I would love to banter them more, but my team finished 15th, so
yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna have a very banterless episode here where I can't really mock anyone or anything.
Shall we quickly touch on Man City as well? Obviously, they finished third in the end, so their disaster season has been...
No trophies, though.
No trophies, which is nice.
Yes.
Because they did get beat by Crystal Palace in the FA Cup final, which will come on
soon. What a game that was.
What a game. But Man City, it's definitely just been a transitional year, hasn't it? I think beginning of the season, they were probably favourites with Arsenal, joint favourites, if not the favourites to win the league.
Mm-hmm.
So it has definitely been a down year and a disappointing year. That being said, it looks like it's going to be, again, kind of teasing. We're going to talk about transfers towards the end of the episode, but it's going to be a big, big year for them. And the rest, not Man United, but the rest are kind of the top five, top six. But Marmoush has come in. He looks really good. Obviously, De Bruyne is now gone, which is obviously going to be a big miss. It looks like Gundogan's probably going to leave. Bernardo Silva's probably going to leave. Grealish might be leaving.
Oh,
I don't know.
Grealish is 100% out the door.
Yeah.
I actually think Gundogan is staying.
Is he going to stay? Is he?
I think they activated his year extension.
Right.
So he's going to be staying. You would anticipate this is the year Bernardo Silva finally leaves, because
the last 4 years, 5 years of him being linked to leave. Yeah.
And Jack Grealish will 100% be going.
Yeah.
I think.
Probably a few others as well that we're thinking of.
We're probably going to get rid of a centre back or something.
Centre back, exactly.
Did you see that comment from Guardiola?
Kovacic maybe on the way out as well.
Where he was essentially saying, if the board, I don't want a big squad.
I don't
want more than... He normally typically will be using 18 to 20 players throughout the whole season. He doesn't want more than 20. And he came out and said, really bizarre comment, in that if the board give me a huge squad, then I might just leave. And I was like, well, that's a bit...
He's kind of had some Guardiola-isms, hasn't he, in the last few weeks. He's kind of gone on his
He's a man
mental...
looking on the edge.
He is.
And
he's very entertaining.
It'll be interesting to see whether he actually has the energy to really go through what they're going to have to do to get back to the levels that they were 3 years. It's really difficult when you're...
I mean, I don't doubt that they'll be back up there next year. Like, obviously, they finished third, so not
as long as Guardiola is there, they're never not going to be in the
pushing
mix
for
of
the
it.
Title. Yeah. Yeah.
And if the season had started 5 months ago and it had another, you'd anticipate, you know,
they would have picked it up.
They would be well in the mix.
Yeah, so there's some injuries problems as well, but so did everyone this year. But yeah, on the back of that, any other team? I mean, we'll talk about Palace winning the FA Cup as well, actually, because that was...
I think that's a good segue.
We haven't done an episode, have we?
No,
since,
we haven't even talked to you. No. Although I'm pretty sure we did say the Palace was going
to
win.
I like to think we did.
Horns in the background.
Yeah,
for our predictions.
Absolutely massive. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy for Crystal Palace. It's been a great year for not the underdogs, but I guess Newcastle winning a trophy, Palace winning a trophy, a certain other team in North London winning a trophy, and Man United not. But really, really happy for Palace. Great that Eze scored. He just got married as well, I saw over the last few days. So congratulations, Eze, from the Red and White Football Podcast.
Obviously, our invites got lost in the post.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things. It's just, it happens.
I understand. I get it.
Great year for Palace. Now going to be in the Europa League as well. Mm-hmm. So they're probably going to be able to hold on to the likes of Mateta, Eze. Gueye might be on his way out from what we've seen.
Feels like he's final year of contract.
Yeah. If they want to kind of cash in on him, now would be the time.
It's funny. Question for you. If you were the Crystal, part of the board of Crystal Palace, are you looking at that? You've got European football. You've got a strong squad. Mm-hmm. You got obviously Wharton as well. And all the others we mentioned.
Of course.
Are you hedging your bets and saying, should we just keep him and risk losing him for free?
Because
this could
yeah.
be the season we build. And if they have a good run in the Europa League, for whatever it's crazy, you know, who's to say?
Football's crazy, man.
They've won an FA Cup. They've obviously got a good coach, fantastic coach. Maybe the team is built for, because they managed to finish 12th again, despite obviously seeming to be very good.
They were shy at the beginning, weren't they? With the first 10 games, yeah.
Might be a very good cup team, and they might see this as an opportunity to go really far. He's obviously, I believe he's the captain, okay?
Yes.
So do they? What would you do? Hedge your bets?
I think they'll probably look to keep him if they can. Yeah. And I think that would make sense. I would. Because like you said, this could be, I mean, even if it's, you know, they don't do particularly well, this is a once-in-a-lifetime European competition for Palace, mm-hmm. potentially. So keeping your captain and maybe, you know, one of your most important players, I mean, if they said, I mean, they were asking for 80 million last year. They're not going to get that now.
No, I reckon this year.
50?
50.
Yeah,
50 to 60
so
mil.
For 50 million, I think they risk maybe keeping him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, depending on what Gueye wants and what he would say, it does have some sway in this. But I would like to think he would want to stay for his club.
But then
club.
If Newcastle come in and offer 50 million and Champions League football for Gueye, obviously, they were the team most linked with him last year. Really almost got close to doing that deal.
Yep.
Are you turning around and being like, yes, obviously, Europa League is cool. It's a World Cup year. Champions League could be
the vibe. It's very difficult. What's the name of the Crystal Palace chairman, owner? I forget.
Steve Parish.
Bang, that's huge for you. He was very good on the microphone after the win. But he's such a diehard Palace fan himself.
I love that.
Which is great.
Vibes.
Which is, again,
it's vibes.
Well, we don't have an
He's
archive.
Obviously been the owner for a considerable period of time and watched this team through many iterations.
Up and down.
How amazing must it be to watch the team that essentially you've helped create from a business point of view anyway, and from managing obviously everything behind it, to watch that team go from a team which obviously was always in the Prem, never really pulling up strings, but always there, to then go watch them beat Manchester City in the final at the FA Cup. Yeah, FA Magical. Cup as well, prestigious. That's the
absolutely,
one
absolutely, yeah. And it
has a first trophy, yeah.
It has brought. It felt like it has brought back that prestige to the FA Cup a little bit, hasn't it? Because Palace fans were, you know, from Man United winning it to City winning it, Chelsea winning it a few years ago.
Arsenal
won in 2020.
Only trophy for Mikel Arteta, shout out.
Great trophy, though. it felt like it had kind of lost its sting a little bit. So Palace coming back and the Palace fans being as excited as they were.
Brilliant.
It's just so
it's been
exciting.
A great season for that.
Great season for Palace.
I feel like there's been a shift in fan culture this year. It feels like it means more for everyone this year.
Yeah, it does.
Than it has in previous. I think it's been one of the better seasons.
I think it's been a good season this year. Better than the last few, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's been great. It's been great. I think, should we go on to the awards now?
Yeah, let's hit the awards.
Yeah, right. Season awards then for the Premier League this year. So we've got best player, best young player, best coach, overachievers, underachieving player, underachieving team. So fairly brief, fairly easy. I mean, I think best players, unfortunately, quite a tap in.
Yeah, it's an easy one. Best player, by far, we've spoken about him sadly enough on this podcast now.
Yep. Bukayo Saka.
No. Victor Lindelof.
Victor Lindelof. It is Mohamed Salah.
Yep. 100% agree. Best player by far in the division this year.
Yep. Didn't single-handedly win the league with him, but was a massive part of Liverpool being the best team this season.
Unbelievably upset that he signed a new deal.
Yep.
I'm hoping that he's got that post of Aubameyang contract in him. But this season, irregardless, he's been fantastic. And there's no debate.
Yeah, I think
that's how good he's been.
Unfortunately, it was that easy. Then we'll go on to best young player. Now, this one for me, there is a bit of bias, but I'm bringing the bias from a place of truth. I think for me, Lewis Skelly has been the standout young player this year for me in the league.
Why?
I think
why over everyone else?
He has come into the Premier League team and looked like a pro, a veteran at 17, 18 years old. And he has made such a difference, even for Arsenal, at the left back. If you look at the performances he put in against Real Madrid in the Champions League, he got that assist for that Marino goal, I believe, or was a huge part in it driving forward. His ability to kind of come in from left back, go into midfield, and how strong he is, and how polished he already looks like a player. I don't think any other kind of young player or kind of breakout player this year has had that impact in the league and looked as good as he has.
Okay.
I think I'm the best for me.
I like what you're saying and I agree with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. He had a great season. He looks ready.
Yeah.
It's the biggest testament to a young player when they come in and they look akin to their senior pros.
Yeah.
It's incredibly difficult so easy to underestimate how difficult it is to go from just academy football to then Premier League football.
Sure.
Some thousands and thousands and thousands of football players never even reach League Two. So to go from academy football at the age of 18 to then Premier League and look perfectly fine in it is a huge achievement. So he's obviously a player and you guys have got one hell of a player on your hands. And yeah, it'll be exciting to hopefully see him transition in the midfield.
I think that's probably on the cards.
If you guys just stop buying ex-Sociedad.
Yes, please.
Ex-Sociedad players. But okay, so I'm going to go for my young player of the season and that is Cole Palmer. From Chelsea.
Oh, I don't like that though. Like he is technically a young player, but he's been around for
It's his second season. It's his second season at Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, if we're doing that, he probably is the young player of the year. I was kind of, how old is he? 23? 22?
No, he's probably 22, I reckon.
Okay, right.
I'll talk about him and then see if I'll do an honourable mentions for someone a bit more different. And then, so Cole Palmer is arguably top three in the Premier League.
I think that's a very good argument.
I think he is England's top three players as well. I think he is someone who just plays football and doesn't think much about anything else.
I don't think he has much choice of
ever.
That.
I think he obviously dropped off a lot.
Kind of post-January, wasn't it, really?
But when he did drop off, it was only because the levels that he'd been hitting have just been so immaculate.
Yeah.
He's been...
And that was with Chelsea, we're kind of struggling as well. And
yeah. He's been, you know... If it wasn't for Salah, he'd be the best player in the Premier League, I believe. He's so good. He's so clinical. He's only thinking about goals, the only thing about assists. His overall play is fantastic. He'll be one of the best players for the next 10 years in the Premier League. And that's why I think he's still so young. And I think it's important to highlight sometimes just because someone's so good. And just because he might be the top three, he is also young. He's only in his second professional season. Does highlight just how good he is.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think I was probably thinking of it over more of a breakout sense of view.
Okay.
So,
well, honourable mentions then. Have you got someone else in your mind?
I mean, we've spoken about him a lot, but Adam Wharton as well is another one.
But I was also thinking Adam Wharton.
He was injured for a lot of the season.
He's injured for a lot of the season.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and his breakout season I would consider also more of last season when the final 6 months after he signed for Blackburn. So I guess other young players that have broken through.
Are you biting your tongue trying not to say... I was going to say Diallo there. I don't know if that was on your mind.
No, Amad Diallo. He hasn't had his breakout. I think he's fantastic. I think he has potential to be...
Well, again, he's 23.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's not young.
But he's one of these where he'll kind of be the same player forever.
Mm-hmm.
His breakout hasn't happened yet. He's had a good season, but his breakout hasn't happened yet, in my opinion.
Okay.
I think there's potential he'll break through many glass ceilings before he reaches that breakout point.
Okay.
I'm really hoping it's next season. He just needs to stay fit. I'm trying to think who else could possibly be a mention for the young player who's had that breakout year. So I'm not overly happy with my choice of Cole Palmer either.
No, I'll tell you what, quick pause. Bear with us. We're going to pull up some information.
So any other ones you're really thinking?
No, I don't think so. For me, Lewis Skelly is mine. Are you going to go with Cole Palmer? You can go with Cole Palmer.
Yeah, I mean, I can. I guess we could also mention Dean Huijsen at Bournemouth. He's had a...
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, he's had a fantastic season, hasn't he? Now he's secured that 50 million move to Real Madrid. Real Madrid's pull, by the way, just insane.
It's
crazy because up until the point Real Madrid came in for him, which was very late, all the groundwork had been done by, firstly, Arsenal. Confusing. Don't understand that.
More defenders. Yes, please.
Secondly, Chelsea, who were apparently leading the race for him, and Liverpool. So it was between those three in the Premier League. And it very much seemed like it was going to be... I don't know why everyone wants to move to Chelsea. I'm not understanding this. They don't pay lots. They have performance incentivized contracts, but their base wage, it's no different to what you would get.
I know. You wonder what they're saying to them in the meetings, don't you?
But they give it, like, for example, we'll come on to it a bit more, but they've just dished out a 10-year contract for Leon Delap.
That's crazy.
Oh, 36.
I hate that. So
much. I guess that, but anyway. So Dean Huijsen's obviously scored a move. He came in. He never actually started at the beginning, and it was due to an injury. Of a Bournemouth centre back, and he came in. And essentially never left and had a stellar season, scored a header against Manchester United.
Sure.
He looks the part, doesn't he?
He looks amazing. At 19 years old, I think. Is he 19 or 20?
Yeah, he's going to be there at Madrid.
For 12 years.
It's even easier to defend in La Liga, for goodness sake. Yeah, if he can defend well in the Premier League, he's definitely going to be able
especially in that Real Madrid team. I wonder, was it an Ancelotti signing or it was probably a club signing?
No, it was, I believe... I think it was more of a Xabi Alonso signing.
Okay.
I think because they weren't really in the race.
No.
And then obviously they've gone out and decided that Xabi Alonso was to be their new manager. Yep. And I think he's kind of very quickly given them a bit of a shopping list that he wanted. And Dean Huijsen was on the list. And the release clause makes it incredibly easy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a great signing for City. 50 million as well for Bournemouth. I don't think they can complain too much about that.
No, absolutely. They could. Hopefully I'm sure they'll find some random geezer for 12 to 15 million
in the Japanese league. That's quite
and I'm sorry, sure he'll be the next one to sell for 50 million. So,
yeah.
Okay, so what's the next
category? Manager of the season. Mm-hmm. I think this is between two. Okay. I mean, should we say at the same time? So here we go.
Okay.
Three, two, one,
Arne Slot.
I think so. I mean, no one expects Liverpool to win the league this year. I think it's funny. I was reading a BBC article the other day, and it was like all the BBC pundits doing their league predictions. Not one of them, but Liverpool number one. Or number two.
The beginning of last season, we wouldn't have put Liverpool.
No one would have.
No. But here they are, and they've done it, and it's weird because everything gets diluted in the wash, but it's monumental to win the league.
It's
come from the Dutch league as well, where there's such a stigma that it's a whole different kettle of fish, and you know, just signing any old ball manager from the Dutch league isn't going to do the job, but. He's cool. I actually like him as well, which is super annoying.
I like Slot a lot as well. I think he's very casual about it. I mean, he's a great coach. He made no signings. Chiesa was the only player that came in.
Which he hasn't used.
So there's all Klopp's old team. And he's come in and he's just completely, you know, they've changed the system. They press a lot less. They dominate the ball just that little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
More possession based. And the players that he's managed to bring out, and one who will come up in a minute, Gravenberg, my gang I mentioned in a minute. But he's, you know, been amazing. McAllister's been unbelievable. So Salah's been crazy. Van Dijk's looked like the best defender again. Like, he's been unbelievable. Even someone like, I mean, how much credit can you give him? But Kelleher, when he's come in and Alisson's been out, been really good.
Outside of Salah, it's very much everyone is the sum of their parts. And it's a unit. They've just, without even particularly looking unbelievable, they've just won all the games that they needed to win. And then, like you say, you have that really strong start. You keep that pace up through the winter. And by the time everyone else had fallen off, Arsenal, Man City had fallen off, Liverpool could kind of just cruise their way through.
They didn't slow down. And I was always saying all season, they can't carry this on. They can't carry this on.
Well, if Arsenal had just been better, then they probably wouldn't have been able to.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, but I also think if Arsenal pushed them more, I think Liverpool would have been better as well. I think it's one of those.
True.
Because there's a whole argument. People are like, I hate Arsenal fans. But like, you know, Liverpool's point tally is, what did they finish on, 87 or something? Yeah. Lowest since Leicester's. But like, yeah, because no one was there next to them.
Yeah, no one really
They were in Dubai or Ibiza 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So they don't give a shit. So I don't blame them. No, Slot. I think special mention to, obviously, Nuno at Forest.
Nuno, yeah, fantastic season.
If they finished maybe top five, maybe you could argue that it is.
I mean,
he probably still would give a Slot.
He's a very close second.
Yeah. From 17th to 8th this season.
Also shout out Victor Pereira of Wolves, coming in mid-season after looking like they might get relegated and turning them around, putting some really good performances together and really just taking away out that relegation zone.
Yep.
Shout out David Moyes at Everton.
Yeah,
again, he came in and undiched it all. And
Absolutely. Since he came in, he won enough points that would have kept them up anyway.
Yeah.
Just him alone.
I don't know. Something about David Moyes being back at Everton makes me like Everton more.
I agree. I've always had a bit of a fuck Everton mentality because I've got a good friend of mine, shout out Mr. Blay if you're watching, who is an Everton fan. But I really like David Moyes there. I like a few of their players now. They're going to have a lot of change this summer.
Yeah.
So they'll be really interesting to watch. Obviously, left Goodison now as well.
Mm-hmm.
New stadium, which has got the worst name ever. I can't remember now, off the top of my head.
Oh, it's the law firm.
Yeah, it's the local law firm. It's awful.
And it's dreadful.
Which obviously it won't be called that, I imagine. Or probably will be, I don't know.
It's called like Doc, I don't know.
Yeah. The name is there now.
I like you guys, I don't like you guys that much, I don't know.
No, so exactly, we don't really care.
It means nothing to me. But anyway, enjoy it, and yeah. So we're going to go on to the next category.
Are looking at, drum roll please, overachievers of the year, and I think we've already mentioned them. I think it's quite a safe one. You ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
Forest. Yeah,
we've already spoken about them.
We spoke about enough. Great team. Probably gonna lose Gibbs White, which is gonna be a huge blow. Yeah, I think so. They've spent a lot of money, I feel, and at some point PSR is gonna have to catch up with them. Obviously, getting where they finished in the league is great, but I don't think it's enough. They'll obviously have to bring players in. I don't think they'll have to be able to bring all these players in without selling some of their players. I think, most importantly, if they can keep a hold of their centre-backs, Milenkovic and Murillo.
I've seen Marino's been linked a lot, hasn't he?
Murillo.
Remember Murillo, sorry?
Murillo, yeah.
Yeah, he's been linked.
If anyone was, and I just really hope he doesn't go to Chelsea.
I know, it's always Chelsea.
And if he does, it's really annoying. But anyway, if they can keep a hold of them too, and obviously I think they'll lose Gibbs White, but if they can sign accordingly.
Well, they've got the money, probably.
They'll spend money.
They will spend
whether
money.
Whether they've got it, I don't know. But they'll spend money, and it'll be interesting to see who they sign. Because I haven't really seen them linked to anyone.
I haven't seen too much. Again, it's obviously still early days. The transfer window opens on tomorrow
for 10 days.
So that will be it'll be interesting to see what they do. But yeah, comfortably the most overachievers this year.
Yeah.
I mean, Liverpool, maybe. Could you argue, have they overachieved by winning the league? Maybe. Considering no one expected it. I think you probably still do give it Forest because no one expected them to be in the race for Champions League.
A lot of people thought they'd be in the mix for relegation.
Absolutely.
So to not do that and then to finish in the Conference League spot is pretty fantastic stuff. Also, any other overachievers? I like what Hertz has done at Brighton, but then also I'm not going to overachieve them because they spent $200 million
and they finished ninth.
They'll be hoping soon to get European football of some sort. Yeah. Otherwise, they're going to have to start selling more of their players.
Absolutely, but yeah, I think Forest comfortably still.
Yeah,
I think are the best. Right, now the negative stuff, which we're not a negative podcast. We hate slagging people off, and all we do is praise people. But it is part of the job. You know, it's got what we've got to do. We'll start with the team. Taylor, what team do you think underachieved the most this season?
Manchester United, obviously. Obviously, sir.
Would you say that, would you?
100%.
Yeah, I think it's 100%.
Gazillion percent, yes.
It has to be.
I think everyone's actually forgetting we finished 15th and Spurs finished 17th.
I want to come on to Spurs later, by the way, which we'll talk about the Europa League final. But yeah, I think it has to be Man United. I think there is an argument maybe for Spurs, but their trophy win.
I'm not going to talk about it now because I'm sure you'll understand why I think they're the biggest overachievers in approximately 10 minutes. Underachievers in approximately 10 minutes. But yeah, it's got to be them. And then what was the final one?
Player. Is there a player that you think has been... I've got an answer. Again, this is from an Arsenal point of view.
What's your answer?
Odegaard, unfortunately.
For the whole...
For me. again, this is kind of coming from an Arsenal, through an Arsenal lens, but it's probably his worst season as a professional, unless you count kind of when he was 17 at Real Madrid.
Cormac, isn't it? He's in the mood.
I am. I know. I've had a beer and a half. I think he struggled a lot with Saka out. He did have that injury as well. He just hasn't looked himself at all this year. PSG, he didn't look like he was ever going to do anything, really. I think there's several other reasons why he struggled, and I don't doubt he can get back to his very best next season. And he's still an absolutely world-class quality player, one of the best kind of attacking midfielders in the league. But as kind of the levels that he came off the year before, where I think he finished with almost 20 goal involvements, to kind of where he finished this year, kind of epitomises Arsenal's attacking prowess this year, which was very disappointing. And unfortunately, he just really struggled with the system change that we had this year. So I think for me, I would probably go Odegaard just because of the level that I held him at to where he performed. I think it's probably the biggest. Arsenal
fans going
to
come for you, bro.
That's fine. That's fine. Come for me. Friendly fire, boys. That's not.
Yeah, it's true. Okay. My opinion on the biggest underachieving player this year is going to be Darwin Nunez.
Do you think he underachieved that much?
Yes. And the reason why I think he's underachieved is as a part of a, he is the number nine.
Premier League winner, Darwin Nunez.
Yeah. Premier League winner, Darwin Nunez. Missed how many big chances this season? Came this second season now in the Premier League, £75 million before whatever add-ons, which he obviously will not achieve.
Like 90 or something.
Yeah, and it's the second season. His team have won the Premier League, and he's been nowhere near anything that they've done successfully.
Yeah,
he's going to be leaving. He's going to be going to Saudi. Which, if you'd have said that when he got bought from Benfica for all that money 2 years ago, that it's going to end
is
after
that,
two
is that,
seasons.
How prominent is that? Because
him moving to Saudi.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone else is going to buy him.
You know what I would love? I was listening to a podcast on the way here, actually. We're talking about kind of summer transfers. And they were all kind of just, it wasn't like rumors. It was more just ideas and speculations out there. And a transfer I absolutely loved. And they were talking about West Ham's need for a forward. And they mentioned the name Darwin Nunez to West Ham. And
I was has like, West Ham ridden?
I would love that.
That could be very much a case of if Liverpool haven't been able to ship him. Because Liverpool will be wanting to buy a striker at some point this season.
Well, I think they're going to need another frontline man. Obviously,
yeah, they are.
We've got a certain German coming in, which we'll touch on as well.
Yeah, and they'll be wanting to buy a striker. There's no room for Darwin Nunez. And if they don't get rid of him to Saudi fairly early on in the window, you know, it might be one in, for example, maybe he moves in this window now for the Club World Cup, goes somewhere. But you could very much see a West Ham coming in, loan bid at the end of the year.
Like 30 million, you know, but they want to, like, not. Again, they made the point on the podcast. They were like, Liverpool want to not break even, but they would want to pay off the rest of the
team. And the only way they're going to do that is if Saudi come in and buy him, because no one else is going to pay any kind of money for him.
No.
Look, I'm a Man U fan. I know my fair share of buying players for loads of money, and they're being worth about 10 mil.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to get rid of these guys, man. You know, they stay around. So unless you find...
I've got a soft spot for Nunez just because he is
a chaos
man.
Yeah.
And I think at a kind of slightly lesser...
Never learned to control the chaos, though, did he? And he never finished those chances when he really... If he'd have just finished five of them, maybe, the light would look different.
Yeah.
But he didn't. So he's going to get shipped out. Yep. Also, shout out Raheem Sterling.
Don't
think he scored a goal.
He didn't. No, we're not in the league anyway. But he got some cup goals, but he gives a shit.
Shout out.
Yeah, just an absolute disaster of a line spell. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call him the underachiever because
I also want to shout out my boy Rasmus Højlund.
Yeah,
he had a really, really, really bad season. He's Manchester United nines go. He might have just had
the worst
season. Yeah. Which I hate to say because you know he's so young, and
there is a player in there
somewhere.
There's
a player in there somewhere, but
just
it's
not
so
United,
far.
There's too much pressure for him, which is fair. He's 22 years old and he's been asked to carry the front line, but he's I've never seen a player so
scored
short.
Scored four league goals. Oh, I think he scored three league goals. Xerxes, he got four. You know, big problem for us is scoring goals, and our two guys up top have not done that.
No.
So I think he's been
another Man United man, maybe.
Yeah,
as well.
You got to have. Look, if we're finishing 15th, someone in there has got to be underachieved. And
yeah, for Manchester United as well, as much as I love him and I still think he is a good player, Mason Mount. A lot of it has been injury related.
Well, I'd say, it's underachieved just because he hasn't been able to be on the football pitch. If he can put together, I won't call him an underachiever until I see him put a body
No, I think
of
that's
fair.
I think maybe I'm being a bit mean.
And
sorry, Mason.
who else has been underachieving? There's been some stinkers. There's got to be a West Ham player in there, surely.
Fulcrum, but who really expected too much? Oh, actually, you know what? Paqueta.
Yeah.
Really didn't have it this year.
No.
Like, considering he was like City linked.
He must have had a bet on it.
He must have had a bet on it. But I thought he really wasn't himself this year. Bowen was kind of the only shining light in that.
He's got to leave in it, surely.
I don't know. Like, he's such a West Ham man.
He is, and he's obviously he's married to Mr. West Ham's daughter.
Exactly.
And
so, you know, I don't know
if the shoe fits.
Yes, I mean, he's kind of got the ball written all over him. But there you go. I'll go with Odegaard with my final one, which is a shame because I still love him and I think he's amazing. But he's
I'm going to go with Darwin Nunez. Yeah.
And those are the season awards. That is kind of the Premier League season wrapped up.
Thank goodness. Done. Bueno. Finito.
Yeah. I think it's been a disappointing year. We'll come on to Arsenal in a bit. But now we'll touch on, which was last week, the Europa League Cup final. Man United 0. Tottenham Hotspurs 1. Tottenham's 17-year trophy drought coming to an end. And that was a League Cup that they won back at 17 years ago. It means Champions League football for Spurs, even though they finished 17th on 38 points. Ange got that second year trophy that he mentioned, which is, you know what, absolutely fair play to him. But oh my God, that might be the worst game of football I have watched all year. It was the goal was an absolute. I can't express how bad of a game of football this was. We were in a pub. I was watching it with a bunch of my friends on our phone because the TV didn't have the ball on, which was great. Shout out that pub in Portsmouth. But Taylor, take me through your Man United thoughts. The thoughts going on during the game and how you're feeling now. Ladies and gentlemen, strapping.
Yeah, strapping, guys. So actually, I'm going to tell you about my journey. So frequent listeners of this podcast will know that I was not going to Bilbao out of my pure rage for being told I was not getting a ticket. And my plans changed. And I already had a flight to Bilbao. And the idea was I was not going to go to Bilbao. I was going to be in Italy. To get some beach time, you know, to relax a little bit, to get away. Plans changed and I ended up going to Bilbao with no ticket, but I thought I would go enjoy the festivities. And then no matter what happened afterwards, I would go enjoy the beach. So I flew into Rome on the Tuesday night. I got there approximately midnight and I had to sleep in an airport for 6 hours. It's important to document the journey because so many people, and this is not just me, thousands of Manchester United fans spent thousands of pounds, hundreds of hours getting themselves to Bilbao. This was not an easy final for people to get to.
No.
It was incredibly expensive. There was a dearth of accommodation available. And it was an incredibly complicated journey and event essentially to plan to get to. So it's important to recognize the effort that was put in. I stepped in an airport for my flight, which was at 7 a.m. from Rome. I didn't sleep. I had about 4 coffees. And then I got on my flight and I arrived at Bilbao at 8 a.m. I went to the gym because I needed a shower. Got a day pass and, you know, was just walking around and it was a beautiful sunny day. And there was lots of Spurs fans everywhere, lots of Manchester United fans everywhere. The day was fantastic. There was no animosity. And shout out the traveling support for both teams because there was no issues. There was no fighting. Obviously, on social media, you'll see stupid videos of people doing stupid stuff. But that is very
fans.
Yeah, there was with the Spurs United fans as well. Like from the nights before, with the leading up and everything, when everyone's drunk. Like that's a very small percentile.
Yeah.
And in terms of the bad rap that English fans get when they travel abroad,
which is a lot,
and we get policed accordingly based off that very very fake
reputation that we have.
Everyone was very, and I actually put it down to the fact that both sets of fans were just incredibly like, we're both awful, so let's just vibe. And that was very much the entire vibe of the whole city. The whole city had been essentially taken over by the British, north versus south. And it was a great day. There was a UEFA like tournament fan zone going on. I was kicking footballs into the river to try and get prizes and everything. And, you know, there was a Manchester United fan zone, which I then went to in the later afternoon, which was a fantastic event. It had Liam Frey from the Courtineers performing.
Really? Yeah. Right. Nice.
And it had like all this food van, massive space. They managed to put it at the highest point of the city. So I literally had all my stuff. I was sweating and I was out of breath and I was so tired. And it was great, you know, spend the afternoon there and had loads of beers, chant to loads of Manchester United fans. And the general vibe was, we have to say we're going to win because we can't for 1 minute think that we're going to lose. And there was thousands of us, thousands of fans, so amped up for the game. And the vibe was there. And then I found a nice bar close to the stadium to settle down in to watch the game, because I had a bus to Barcelona at 11 o'clock. So I could only watch about 65 minutes of the game before I had to take an overnight bus to Barcelona to then get to where I was meant to be.
Taylor's crazy travel stories are ridiculous.
Yeah, and it was really cool, actually. I sat down in this bar, and then I had two guys turn up. They were living in Barcelona. One was from England. The other one was from South Africa. The South African was a Spurs fan. The English guy was a Man U fan. And they brought tickets on the spot to get into the stadium. The game had kicked off and tickets hadn't delivered. And they were just anxiously waiting, because they spent like €500 each on tickets. And they were just like, you know, I bought them a beer while we were waiting and everything. And they were like, I've got the tickets. So they ran off to the stadium.
Good on them.
So I sat with some Spaniards watching the game. And frankly, it was just
awful.
Awful, wasn't it?
Just a complete lack of quality.
That's why we wanted to talk about my plans, really, because I just wanted to fill the time
before I started talking about the game. There's not much to talk about in the game, other than that it was shite.
So obviously, the first 30 to 40 minutes, it very much... Spurs not really doing anything, and Manchester United holding on the ball.
You dominated the ball, which I think was a bit of a surprise, right?
And we created very little. But just before going on to carry on to the game, very interesting to see Mason Mount start that final over Alejandro Garnacho. I personally didn't agree with the decision.
I think, well, and definitely in hindsight, it definitely wasn't. Especially to play him as long as they did.
Hindsight is a thing, but to see a year on from our FA Cup win where Mainu had scored and Garnacho had scored to take us to victory, to see them both on the bench of a European final is low-key heartbreaking as a Manchester United fan, because that's not where this should be. Garnacho has had a indifferent season from a Manchester United perspective, in that he's managed to get 10 goals, 10 assists in all competitions, but also he's missed so many big chances and he's not a natural fit in the new system that the coach wants to play. So I can understand it, but also respectfully, I think as a coach, you have to look at what someone's given you, and he's played over 50 games this season. He has contributed. He's not like Haaland, who has managed to get 4 or 5 goals in all competitions. He has got double digits contributions and goals and assists. He is a constant threat. And in a team where we offer so little, he will at least always be someone who will get the ball and drive and try and create something with every action that he makes. So the fact that he was dropped to the bench for Mason Mount, who granted, yes, had a stronger second leg performance against Bilbao, but that's the only thing he's offered us in the 2 years he's been there that is not... I know the coach likes him and he's much more of a natural fit in that inside 10. But in just terms of rewarding the season, it's the final game. It's essentially a do or die game. To drop Garnacho, I just think it sends the completely wrong message to the squad, in that, yes, you can do all this for us. You can essentially be available every single game. But if the player that I like comes back from injury, you're probably going to get dropped because I don't think you're going to fit the system. It's a shame. So then, about 43 minutes, 44 minutes, just before halftime, the worst goal I've ever seen in a professional game. If you'd have seen that goal on Twitter, on like a Sunday League channel, saying, oh, isn't this classic Sunday League? I'd be like, yeah, that is classic Sunday League, but this is a European final between two Premier League teams. And I've watched that goal, and I'm happy to be told otherwise. I've watched this goal like 10 times. I still don't know how it's gone in.
No fucking clue. I think it's called down as a Brendan Johnson goal, right? Mm-hmm. When it looked like it. I mean, and I haven't watched it in probably since the day of the game, but it looked like it was more of an own goal from Luke Shaw.
Firstly, 2 points of call before I get to the main point of call, which is that Patrick Dorgu's completely left that back post open because he is a left wing back, and I don't care how attacking my left wing back needs to be.
Still needs to be able to defend.
Yes. Yeah. But then alternative train of thought, in that having Luke Shaw as a left back, playing that inside centre back, left sided role, he should have the knowledge, the experience, the positional awareness to be like, okay, this 20-year-old probably isn't going to be at the back post. I'll get myself there.
Yep.
Gets himself there, fumbles it completely. I don't know what he does, hits him on his arm, and then it somehow goes in. But my favourite part about all of this is that my goalkeeper has this wonderful thing that he does, where when a ball is rolling across the floor, he dives really high into the air, away from the floor. And he's done this on multiple occasions. If you watch the Lucas Moura Champions League goal that Tottenham scored to get to the final, he essentially is coming through the centre of the box, and he hits it along the floor.
I didn't realise Onana was the keeper.
Andre Onana was in goal for that game. And if you watch that goal, and I challenge you to watch this goal, he does exactly what he just did in the final now, which is jump really high in the air, away from the floor, and it just trickles under him because he's in the air. Anyway, halftime, I'd left the bar before they scored. So then I'm walking to the bus station because I love being on time for things and I hate anxiously thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be late. So I left. I was like, it should be fine. It's 2 minutes before halftime. Anyway, I'm next to the stadium. The stadium erupts. And I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? I literally grab a random person on the street. I was like, what has happened? Forgetting that I can obviously just check my mobile device. I checked my mobile device and it was the Spurs goal. And I was like, you know what? Screw this. At that moment, I knew we weren't going to win.
Yeah.
And the second half, very much Spurs battened down the hatches. It completely changed the team talk. Ange obviously must have gone in there saying, mate, we're winning.
Mate, we're winning.
Mm. Don't fucking let them.
It was just like, protect the lead. Like, yeah, they weren't trying anything going forward.
And that's it. And in the second half, again, it was a whole lot of nothing. Mm. The only thing which really I would mention is that if it was Casemiro over Rasmus Højlund with that free header, which was cleared off the line heroically.
Great clearance by Van de Ven.
Van de Ven. Shout out the fact his hamstring didn't pop out of his spine.
Oh, no, that's very impressive.
But the fact that it wasn't Casemiro and it was Rasmus Højlund, if Casemiro had had that header, that's going in mm-hmm. my personal humble opinion. I thought Bruno had a really quiet game.
Bruno really struggled. Really struggled.
Again, I mentioned it earlier, but the fact that Mainoo got 2 minutes in this game is
embarrassing.
Criminal.
It's embarrassing.
It's criminal. I thought, Lenny Oro, obviously, I thought he performed quite well.
He didn't have a lot to do, to be honest with you. Like, Spurs really weren't... Again, both teams were bad.
We've already over-talked this by talking about it for more than 2 minutes because that was how much of a nothing thing it was. But it was just... It's just everything that comes after it.
Yeah.
So now, full-time whistle goes. Manchester United have lost. Tottenham have won. Credit to Tottenham. They won the game. They, in 10 years, won't remember how dire of a game this was.
Yeah, they've won it.
Got that's how the cookie crumbles. But for Manchester United now, the repercussions are ginormously humongous in that we are now... We are... Where we thought we were at the bottom of the barrel actually turned out to be a trapdoor. And we've now fallen through the trapdoor. And then we thought, oh, God, okay, it's bad down here, dark. But at least it can't get any worse. But then the final happened. And it turns out there was another trapdoor. And we fell through it again. So we are now as low as you can physically imagine. As a fan base, as a club, everything that the club's doing is just it's just annoying everyone more. 48 hours after the final, they had released more redundancies. They emailed staff 48 hours after the final to say, yes, I know you're at the party that we put on where you all got a hot dog each and maybe a beer, but sorry to sell you, but you've lost your job. It's just the way we're going. And I understand it from an X and O point of view on a financial sheet that these changes have to be made. But it just feels like
it's not a football
club. I always thought my club was a club which historically had etiquette, had class, always put the working man first. Manchester United has been a working man's team since its inception. Its fan base is predominantly working class people who spend a lot of time, effort and money in supporting the team and have been able to see the team perform really well and be very successful. But to see them now act classless, to see them now act with no remorse, no compassion, and no emotion, and just very much see it as running it a business, running it like a petrochemical business, is a bit soul destroying.
It's soulless, what I was going to say. It's brutal. It's awful.
And fans are rallying because in times of trouble, especially Manchester United fans, the nature of them is that they turn their back in defiance and we are Manchester United and everything will be okay. But also, speaking honestly, we're not okay. We are financially ruined mm-hmm. at the minute. The only way out seems to be firing more people. The only way out seems to be selling key assets, which, because we brought in this head coach and the leadership team, have a lot to answer for. And they will do their spiel, they will do their interviews, and they will do a lot more conversation than the previous regime would have. But they're not answering what the fans want to hear, which is, why have you brought in a coach which is playing three at the back when, firstly, it makes me think, do they not understand the project at hand? Because I look at Manchester United and I think, we've never played three at the back in our historical history, ever. It's not what we do. We're a 4-4-2, we're a 4-3-3 team. It's what we've always done. It's never been three at the back, because three at the back indicates a completely different vibe, which I've never associated with Manchester United.
It's a vibe of negative football, really.
It's a conservative attitude to play football. And Manchester United, I've always associated with wingers, high
strikers.
Top class strikers, wingers, sticking to the touchline, you know, get bums off seats, strong midfield, quality throughout the pitch, but also two stoic centre backs as a partnership. Now we have three centre backs, which immediately removes
and are far from stoic as well.
And also, what I hate the most about this formation and this system is the biggest onus on our attack is through our wing backs, and I hate that, because a wing back, for as much as yes, there are plenty of wing backs in the world where they attack, they have good attacking output. Take Liverpool's new signing Jeremy Frimpong, you know,
41 goals and assists in the last two seasons.
Yeah,
but he can't defend.
But. That's not how Manchester United ever play. We don't want our key attacking assets to be from right and left wing back. It's a miserable way to play football.
Yep.
I want my left wing, my right wing, I want my cam, and I want my striker to attack in unison. And I don't want it to be coming down my left wing back and my right wing back, especially when one of them is Diego Dallo. So it's overall right now horrible, and it's not going to get any better. Immediately after the game against Aston Villa, literally immediately after the game, all the players took their suitcases to the stadium. They shipped them off to Malaysia for a post-season tour, which was against AESN
Asian All-Stars or something.
And then the national team of Hong Kong. And for £8 million, by the way.
What an absolute disaster of a tour that's
the
been.
Stadium was empty, and we lost the first game, and we managed to win against Hong Kong.
What was the name of the trophy you left?
I saw it earlier on Twitter.
French, yeah.
Some stupid name. And
it's just in everything about this club right now is screaming embarrassing. I don't like how the coach is approaching certain situations. Again, Garnacho looks like he's going to be leaving. The big one, obviously, the big news, which I guess I will mention now, is that Bruno Fernandes looks, if I was to put a percentage chance on it, I would say about 65%. Chance, oh, more likely he will be leaving than staying. And at that point, I'm thinking, well, really, what is the point? Because, okay, we get 100 million for Bruno Fernandes.
I'm saying more like 80 as well.
Yeah, get between 80 and 100 million for Bruno Fernandes. What proof do I have that anyone associated with Manchester United in the last 10 years, not even just the new guys, but just anyone, can get 100 million pounds and spend it responsibly, appropriately? This manager is going to be backed, and he's going to have players that are brought in. But we've done it with every single manager we've ever had. That's our whole... Everyone's like, oh, no, wait. Wait till Ruben's backed. Wait till he gets his players in. We've done this with every single coach already, and it always just goes wrong, because as soon as the coach gets sacked, all of a sudden, Ruben Amorim gets sacked because we're 11th at Christmas. And then we've just got 14 wing-backs and 19 centre-backs and one striker, because it's just like... Well, we attack for it, and then all of a sudden we bring someone else in, and we go back to a 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3, and we just have none of the right players here. It's obviously, I know the whole remit, the whole nonsense they're spouting is that no, we're buying fluid players, you can play in a variety of systems, not about the system, but inevitably the players they're brought in are going to be coached to this system, and on the system as well. It's upsetting because the academy obviously aren't taught in a three-back system. They're taught in a traditional more 3-3-3 system, 4-3-3 system. So then it means it's even harder for these young kids to adapt when they do get called up, albeit I think we're going to be seeing more of them because we're not going to be spending as much money as Twitter will make you believe. We're not spending 75 million on a striker when we've committed 62 million pounds to Cunha. In what world do people think we're going to be spending 50 million pounds on Edison from this is my problem as well. We sell Bruno for 100 million and we spend 50 million on it from Edison from Atalanta, and then we buy, I don't know who else, some random rubbish person for 45-50 million. That's the Bruno money gone, and it's not moving the needle. Whereas if Bruno leaves, people underestimate Bruno speaks multiple languages. He is a very headstrong professional. He's very direct, he's very committed. He has also been Manchester United's main guy. Every time a new youth player comes into the team, he is the first to pat them on the back and chat to them. He's always there. He's been our steadfast leader for years now. You don't buy that for what we're going to be buying. If we lose him, we lose the only remaining piece of soul that we have left in the club. And I think I can't speak about it anymore.
Well, I think you've done quite well there, considering you can't speak about anything else.
Did I keep it measured?
I think so. I think you played it real cool. Real cool.
Summarise, bit of a disaster, Man United. It's going to be a really interesting summer. It pains me to say, I guess, congratulations Spurs as well on the win of the Europa League.
I'm not speaking about it. I said to someone at work, I was like, I'm glad I haven't spoke to a Spurs fan today because I got sacked.
But yeah, an absolute disaster class from Man United. 15th in European football. Kind of leading on from that, I think we'll start to look at the summer.
Well, actually, come up before we...
Oh, should we talk about Arsenal briefly?
Oh, when you talk about Arsenal, give me a break.
Yeah,
Talk me through. What's your overall thoughts and what's your overall expectations going into the summer?
This won't be as long as the Man United session, so don't worry, folks. But I think it's not a shock to say... disappointing year, because there's no silverware, no trophy. We didn't challenge to that Premier League that we wanted to. Listen, we did get to the Champions League semi-final, which is great, but still, with the context of everything else, it's you know, disappointing, I guess you would say. I don't think Twitter will lead you to make you believe that this has been an absolute disaster season. Who is Arteta? What's he doing? That is stupid. Arteta is the guy. He still is the guy. We've had a bad year. Sometimes that happens, I think, is the way you've got to look at it. Yes, we've struggled with injuries. I saw Thierry Henry on the overlap, who is my favourite player of all time, which many Arsenal fans my age will probably tell you, kind of talk about. He can't use his excuses and injuries and stuff. And you know what? He is right. And he also went on to mention about, you know, trophies and how Arsenal haven't won any. And he did say, you know, Man United obviously won FA Cup. That all being said, which he is right, you know, we haven't won any trophies. That being said, you can't pretend now that next year Arsenal finish third and win a Carabao Cup, that people are going to be praised. Unless it's the Champions League or the Premier League.
Comparing football teams, by the way, is the stupidest thing
ever. It is so stupid.
Because there's so much luck and variables in that it makes it uncomparable. So many people love to do it.
Yeah, which, I mean, I get it.
It's part
of it, but it's very contextual. But yeah, the year, disappointing, not a shock to say that. I think because it's a big summer incoming. Looks like Arsenal already signed Zubimendi, who is the 26-year-old, I want to say, midfielder from Sociedad. He's a defensive midfielder. So I think he comes in and he starts immediately because it looks like there's going to be like Jorginho's on his way out.
You don't spend 60 million on a player.
He quality player. Liverpool wanted him last year. He wanted to stay for another year. And we
didn't want to move to Liverpool.
Yeah, like other players. But, you know, we'll come on to Liverpool because they're actually looking quite exciting already next year. That's a good signing, I think. Not necessarily a necessary one. The big one that everyone's spoken about for the last 18 months to 2 years is the striker. Links coming out the last few days that Siesco at Leipzig, make sure I'm getting the right Red Bull club there, Leipzig, is Arteta's favourite from what we've seen. It looks like Jokeres is our sporting director, I can't remember his name, which is really embarrassing. But Jokeres, who plays for Lisbon, looks like the favourite for him. They're both big boys. I think Siesco is a 22-year-old, would not be the correct decision.
It's a dangerous signing.
It's a very dangerous signing. He is a man who is got that Nunez gene, aka
the Bozo gene. Yes.
He's a big guy. He's like 6'3". He's rapid. He's strong. But he misses a lot of chances. And we don't need... And he's only 22 years old as well. So he's by far the finished article. Whereas Arsenal right now, we need someone who's in to win now.
I think... I saw a graphic for Sesko. His professional seasons and the goals he scored. He's hit consistently between 16 and 22 goals. I wasn't sure if it's in all competitions or in league.
Yeah.
Across his professional career. It's consistent, but it's not spectacular.
Yeah. Which I don't think we need a 30-goal-a-season striker.
No, because Saka will get your goals.
Saka will get your goals. I think we'll probably bring in another left winger as well.
If you bring in Sesko, it's incredibly important that you bring in a world class.
Well, Rodrigo, obviously, for Real Madrid, has been some.
I don't think that will happen.
I would be very surprised.
I'd be very surprised.
I mean, that would be an amazing signing.
Yeah, that would elevate your ceiling immediately.
Yeah, it would be crazy. But then, I don't
is
think
he not more of a right winger than more than a left winger?
Yeah, he is, I think, traditionally. I think he's played more games
don't
on the right.
Don't do what we did with Sancho, which is buy him to play on the right wing, and he gets it. He's like, yeah, by the way, bro, I like playing on the left wing. And it's like, oh, wait, but we've got Marcus Rashford. So I guess you both can just not be a Manchester United anymore.
Fuck off then, yeah. But yeah, so just summarise the season. Disappointing. There are bright moments. For example, Lewis Skelly we've spoken about. Looks like Gabriel, centre-back, is about to sign another contract as well.
Huge news.
Which is massive, because we did miss him towards the end. Saliba's still going to be here next year. There's obviously murmurs. There's been Real Madrid murmurs since we signed him, basically.
They haven't got that much money.
No, they haven't got that much money. But that's exciting. We have, again, we've got the best defence in the league. So it is now. We need a striker, a left winger, probably another right winger as well, because Saka dropping out. You know, someone who can push Saka more.
Or Raheem Sterling.
Yeah, God. I don't know what's going to happen with him and Chelsea, you know. That'll be really interesting.
That's funny.
He's got to go abroad, isn't he? Oh, Sterling.
Saudi.
What a stinker. Yeah, Saudi. But I think next year is going to be the biggest year of Arteta's.
It's the year where either people turn or you silence the critics.
I think so. I think there's obviously a lot of context to do with all that. But yeah, it's going to be, we're going to need to be Premier League, Champions League, FA Cup. The real issue we've had is we haven't really had massive cup runs with Arteta. It's always been league focused, which has been great but we haven't won any leagues. So who gives a shit, you know? So I think next year will be vital. Yeah, I think so. It's going to be vital, but it's going to be big money.
Give me a name for left wing.
Other than Rodrigo, I don't know who you look at. I think
Nico Williams.
You know what? Nico Williams isn't an awful shout. He's going to be expensive, though, and I think he's on a lot of money.
Well, as the problem we've discussed previously on this podcast, because we are well-traveled humans
we know
the European leagues, you would have to pay the... He has a £50 million release clause, which on the surface sounds okay, but the nature of Spanish football is it has to be paid in one lump sum. So there's no option to split that payment. So it's an incredible output for one summer
and
in a year the times where we roll along 3-year financial periods, £50 million in one hit.
He's on about €250,000 a week as well. Yeah, I think
that's amazing.
I know exactly. So I think that would be a crazy, crazy signing. Someone like Avisa at Brentford.
Well, Antoine Semenyo, perhaps.
Semenyo would be amazing. There are options and there are players out there, but we do need more attacking players. Like, I think Havertz had quite a solid year when he played, but he's not a striker. He's not a goal scorer.
I've got a question for you.
Go on.
Alejandro Garnacho, would you take him? 40 mil?
Probably not for 40 mil.
Really?
I think there's better players out there. And again, it comes back to Arsenal need players.
10 goals, 10 assists, and it's worst Manchester United team of all time.
I don't think he's that guy for Arsenal, unfortunately. I think he is a good player, and I think he will be a very good player. And I think Man United getting rid of him is stupid.
Stupid.
But
wholeheartedly.
I know, but I think, yeah, we need players 25, 26 years old and kind of going to come in and make an immediate
for phase
impact.
Six, you need these.
For phase 15.
You do need these 25 to 28 year olds
who are
actually good.
And there's going to be a lot of pressure on these guys coming in, especially this number 9 that we end up signing. I don't think Sesko is that guy.
I don't think he's that guy.
I think if I had to pick, it probably would be Jokeres. Again, I know he's coming from Portugal.
I don't know why you guys don't just go get Victor Osimhen.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? So he's only 28.
Yeah.
And he probably is the safest option at the moment on the striking market.
It's the wages, I think.
He wants at least £300,000 a year.
And the questions around his character.
Yeah.
And Arteta is the weirdo we know him to be.
Mm-hmm.
Wants his players to be robotic family man with families of 16 children and married and, you know.
No loose cannons.
And Osimhen has the potential to be, which is why I think Manchester United should be signing Victor
Osimhen. I think that would be an amazing signing.
Because we need more loose cannons.
Would be the signing of the summer. Man United end up with Osimhen.
Yeah.
Would be hilarious.
The vibes seem to be from well-connected people in the media.
Yeah, that we know.
That obviously we know.
Our connections.
Is that he seemed... The move to the Premier League is very much just all more speculation rather than reality. And the actual reality of it, he's probably going to move to Saudi.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, if a Premier League team did pull it off, I think that'd be absolute god. I mean, I would love to watch a Victor Osimhen.
I would love to be, yeah. Well, I mean, he was linked to Chelsea, obviously, wasn't he, a few years ago? Obviously, now with
but
the
I'm pretty sure
in.
My great nan was linked to Chelsea last week, so.
Fair point. But yeah, I think that number nine is going to be very important. I know, obviously, we were linked with Watkins a lot in the summer, who apparently reports have come out. Have you seen this? That we were offered Watkins before they sold Duran, and Arteta said no. Which is very interesting, and I wonder what that is, because I can't imagine it's a character thing, because Watkins seems like, I mean, he's an animal on the pitch, and he is a very good player. Obviously, he's 30
gonna,
years
he's
old
gonna,
now.
Yeah, he's going to get you 15 Premier League goals.
Absolutely,
which this season would have moved the needle for you. So.
I think for 60 million, I think you probably sign him in January.
Well, I think in January for 60, 100%. But I hated this. I said it at the time, and I say it now. Everyone was using this phrase, oh, they're keeping their powder dry for the summer. But if they're keeping their powder dry and they sign Benjamin Sesko, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking...
For apparently, reported like 90 million euros they want for him.
Obviously. It would be
60. Come on now. Let's calm down.
Yeah, come on. There is, I truly believe, so much... if you're going to buy Benjamin Sesko for 60, you're so much better hedging your bets on a 20-year-old for 20 million.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing how that goes. Because I think... And then Hugo Etiquique.
There we go. I think we're pronouncing that perfectly.
Not pronounce that properly.
Yeah.
He's going to be going for 80 million euros, and apparently he's going to Chelsea as well. So
please don't go to Chelsea.
Why
really
is everyone
exciting.
Going to Chelsea? If any professional footballers are listening to this podcast, and I know there's a few of you, so do not go to Chelsea. Stop doing this. Stop feeding the beast. They're destroying the market, and they're ruining careers.
Go to Portsmouth, man. It's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
Just live it up by the sea.
Yeah.
I think you'll have a great time. But yeah, quickly summarizing then, Arsenal, a lot of money to be spent, 250 million plus summer. I'm expecting to come in here. Striker, at least one other forward, probably another midfielder, and another Thomas Partey contract, which I'm so, so, so embarrassed by. But you all know the reasons for that. We don't need to get into all that. But yeah, on that, okay, we'll start. Again, this is kind of the beginning of that. We've already started the transfer talk. Cunha to Man United, we'll touch on very briefly.
Yeah, medical scheduled this weekend.
Yep. I think that is a good signing for Man United.
It's a fine signing.
62 million, though, is since the loss.
Yeah, it's split over three payments.
Okay.
I love Manchester United's negotiation technique for this, in that we approached Wolves after agreeing the personal terms with Cunha and said, "Hi, guys. We know that the buyout clause is stipulated over three payments. So how about we just do five?" And Wolves answered with an immediate no, to which Man U said, "Fair, we'll pay him three then." So respect for the
negotiation
trying.
Kings.
Yeah, negotiation kings.
Yeah.
Credit. Yeah, good signing. Again, I need to see and evaluate Manchester United's transfer strategy at the end of this window, because one player right now is not moving the needle. Two players is not moving the needle.
You need about six or seven.
Four to five players might move the needle, and they all have to be successful. Last season, we signed Matthijs de Ligt. I'd give him a 6 out of 10 because...
He's had a rough year.
He's been injured, but also he's been imperious in moments, but then also been at fault in also. So, yeah. Okay. But also, why did we have to sign him? I don't know. Manuel Ugarte, I would consider him a disappointment, because we sold Scott McTominay, who...
The king of Napoli.
The king of
Naples.
Oh
my god, we need to speak about that actually.
We do. Because...
Scores a scissor kick in the final game of the season for Napoli. And then Lukaku scores the second one for them to win the league.
Yeah.
He has been on an absolute tear the lot. He's basically been given keys to the city. Met the Pope the other day, shook hands with the Pope. Yeah. And he's having the absolute... And I am over the moon happy for him.
Of course, he's been permanently missed profile.
Yeah.
And Antonio Conte saw him, thought... Boy, have I got an idea for you.
Let's crash that box, mate.
That box, and he's done it. And Jesus Christ, Scott McTominay is the MVP of the Serie A this season. He's won the league, and he's the MVP.
Hilarious.
He's been seen. He will never have to buy a pizza or an Aperol Spritz.
Or a cigarette, which he's been enjoying as well.
Or a cigarette, which also hilarious.
Love it. Good. I think more football players should smoke.
I can't believe, yes, that's crazy. I mean, like, I can't believe he's not hitting this. So he's hitting this.
Straight up on the bags,
man. Bro's been in the Mediterranean for like a year now, and he's like full.
Ripping.
He did a great interview.
Unfiltered roll-ups.
They were like, what's some of the things, he goes, the vegetables here are just different. The tomatoes are just otherworldly. So bro is fully invested into the culture there. He's become that, sadly, and I think everyone's forgetting this, he was that guy last year for Man U.
He was.
Because we'd have finished 12th if it wasn't for
his goals.
He scored 2 goals against Brentford in the 90th and the 94th minute to win us a game.
Yeah.
The amount of times, and this is my bad. Last year, I always used to shout about McTominay because I always thought he's getting in the way. When he would score, I'd be like, brilliant. But that's where Rasmus Højlund, who would always be directly behind him, should be to score. But actually, no, it turns out I was completely wrong. And he wouldn't have scored them. And Scott McTominay was just scoring them.
Yeah.
So we sold him for Ugarte, who's been...
Started on the bench again, didn't he?
Yeah, hasn't played the last 3 games of the season. And this is a guy who, as the people on Twitter would like to remind you, knows the system and knows the manager. Bro, he didn't play in the final. And when he has played, he's looked bozo-ish.
To say the least.
Yeah, so we sold McTominay, and obviously he's gone on, and congratulations to him and Napoli for winning the Serie A. Huge, the city absolutely adore.
Oh, God,
you win the league title in Naples, you are forever.
You're a god. Yeah.
And now he will sit alongside Maradona and Kvaratskhelia and murals across the city, which is unbelievable to think. And it's, I mean, who else did we sign? We signed... Mateus De Ligt, Nuz Mazraoui, who I actually think is a fantastic signing. I think for 15 million or whatever, he's not the problem.
No.
We also signed...
let's not do this too much. We're talking about United so much.
We have.
Who do you want to sign? Let's say. Summarise really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have to give me names by any means. Just give me positions.
Yep.
Let's go 4.
Because mm-hmm.
you probably need at least 4.
Yeah, I would love us to sign Brian Mbeumo. I'd love us to sign Victor Osimhen. I would love us to sign Boubacar Kamara from... Aston Villa. I would also love, if we do sell, Bruno Fernandes to sign Carlos Baleba from Brighton.
Okay, none of those are going to happen.
No,
but I love to speculate and I love to dream. But yeah, that's very exciting. Other big transfer news, which we'll touch on briefly. The biggest one, I think, is Florian Wirtz going to Liverpool.
Humongous numbers.
Yeah. So is he? He's going to be the most expensive Premier League player.
£105 million, €130 million.
Is that less than Caicedo? It might be just a bit less.
Might just be about. But that will be bonuses, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be top 3 most expensive signings in Premier League history.
And it's probably going to be worth it.
I think
this guy, again, I'm not by any means a German league expert, despite what people may say. I think he is... going to be the game changer for Liverpool again.
I think for Liverpool he could be.
I think he's going to be unbelievable. Oh, he's so good. 22 years old. Scores goals. Whenever he has the ball, he looks exciting. Can play the right pass. Can dribble past players, no problem. I think he is going to be vital for Liverpool next year. And I think that takes a lot of the stress off an aging Salah. And to have him and Salah in the same team on the same lineup feels unfair. And I think that's an absolutely amazing signing for them.
I'm going to temper that and say I actually think it might be just a fine signing. I think by the time if his contract ends at Liverpool and we reflect, I think it will be... I don't think it will be what Salah... I don't think it will be like Ballon d'Or style.
I think
it could be. I just think, for example, Manchester City, and I find this more annoying, have begun discussions with Leon over the fee for Ryan Cherki.
Think he's better?
No, I just think pound for pound.
Okay.
I think that's a better acquisition
than
130 million on Wirtz. But also, Liverpool can because they've just won the league.
Yeah. And they haven't spent any money.
They have Champions League money from this year. They have Champions League money from last year. They've got no signings from last year on the books. You know, their quid's in. They're going to sell a couple of players for good money. Obviously, Trent, 10 mil on the books, lol.
I mean, I'll take it.
Yeah, take it at this point. They'll be able to sign more players. It'll be a very good signing for me.
I think it will be. I think he's awesome. They've also got Frimpong.
It's an exciting signing, yeah.
Yeah, Frimpong
isn't
as well.
Isn't it so funny that they signed Frimpong and Wirtz and Xabi Alonso is not their manager?
I know. They just got the Leverkusen guys anyway. Yep. Frimpong's an interesting one because he's played a left wing back for Leverkusen, for those who don't know. And he is the ultimate attacking wing-back as well.
Well, I saw a great meme which was like, can't get shouted at for not defending when
if you're not in a position. Yeah, I saw that as well. So I'm assuming he's going to come in and play left-back because they're not going to play him left wing, are they?
No.
Even though sometimes he does play like that.
Oh, do you mean right wing?
Right wing, yeah, yeah, sorry.
Right wing back.
But yeah, that will be really interesting to see.
I think it'll be good. Look, they've got a centre-back partnership of Virgil van Dijk and Ibrahim Konate. Probably one up there with Liverpool's. Super solid. Love it. They'll be great. Yep. They do the lion's share of defending. He'll be fine. Look,
it will be fine.
He'll be fine. He'll be a good signing. And they've also got Connor Bradley. Like, it's not do or die. They've got someone who already knows the system.
And they've got the likes of Gravenberg if he has a season like he did this year.
Yeah. Another one to touch on very quickly, Liam Delap stinks, moving to Chelsea, 10-year contract, 30 million buyout clause. As many of you frequent listeners of the pod will know, I've been saying, lol, 30 million for Delap, can't wait to see me United shirt. Well, now I'm going to have to watch him play for Chelsea. I didn't want to sign Rory Delap's son anyway, so...
I think this is probably a better signing for Chelsea than it would have been for United.
Yeah, probably.
Because the last thing you need is another 22-year-old unproven
striker. Yeah, I just hope he enjoys the bench.
I know. It's a shame. And Chelsea do suck and they do sign fucking everyone. I mean, it's a great move for him, to be fair, because he's gone from a relegated to a Champions League level squad.
Everton almost signed Armando Broja for 30 mil a couple of years ago. Yeah. And you're getting someone who's actually scored 12 Premier League goals in a relegated team. Obviously got a higher ceiling, has potential that maybe he could reach that 20 goals a season mark.
I don't think he's that great, really. I don't think that
remember, we watched him in an Ipswich team.
That's true. He did have a very good year.
He's very good at driving with the ball. He's obviously quite athletic. He's quite agile. He's quite good at dribbling.
Which is going to have to change up, obviously, as well.
Like, because Maresca don't play that way. So
it's going to be a lot more kind of clinical finishes, which Jackson doesn't have.
Yeah.
So they're going to obviously want, I mean, 30 million isn't do or die money as well. So I think
a 10-year contract, by the way, for one of the two, if it doesn't go well, is definitely a problem.
Exactly.
Todd Boehly, who only speaks at footballing conferences in the Middle East, by the way, was at a footballing conference in the Middle East and was talking about how they were trendsetters in the world of major football because we were the first to be giving these 10-year, 8-year contracts out. And I just heard that.
Keep Americans out of football.
And I just thought, bro, yeah, you're the first, but you're the only one still doing that. Like, you're the only team.
What's going on with Mudryk these days? Because he's been suspended, isn't he?
Bro, wore that chain, though, out in Poland. He got the medal, so he was out wearing that chain.
I mean, good on him, I guess.
Yeah, man.
I do feel bad for Mudryk. I do feel bad for him.
I do. Yeah. I think I do.
He's had a bit of a rough time.
We spoke so much, so I can't be bothered to explain why, but I just do feel that.
Yeah, like I said, it was going to be a long episode. Any other transfers at the moment?
I think we save him for we will be back frequently now.
We will. Now,
we're back.
The season's over.
We can do more fun stuff. We can chat to you guys more.
Exactly. If there are any other ideas, if anyone is listening and cares to let us know what you want to see, we'll give it a bloody go.
Pre-season begins end of July, so we've got
the Club World Cup coming up as well.
We have got the Club World Cup, and I'm promising between now and the Club World Cup to sit down and give you guys a bit of an in-depth...
We have about 2 weeks for that.
Yeah, an in-depth breakdown into the background and to why this thing exists.
And why it sticks.
Who are the stakeholders, and who does it really mean the most to? And not to spoil anything, but it's not the footballers or the football clubs.
£1 billion prize.
Well, it means a lot more to them now as a result, but for a long time this has not meant anything to the world of football but the men in suits. Yep. And we'll do that breakdown, we'll have a good discussion about that, we'll do a bit of a preview into the teams that are there, players are going to be signing for these teams, what's Cristiano Ronaldo going to do. Talk through all of that.
So much football, folks. So
much football. The football never ends. No one will ever win the football, and we are excited to say that is the conclusion of the 24-25 season for football. And thank you very much for joining us.
Quickly, remember when we were like, what a year to start a podcast, both Arsenal and Man United win European trophies. That didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen.
Dear, but yeah, sorry.
Here we are. But yeah, thank you for joining us on our first 5-6 months on our podcasting journey, detailing all of the football news that comes our way, and we love to share and discuss with all of our listeners. And we're sorry that we left you in the lurch. We've been emotionally distraught, really, frankly, the last few weeks. So we've rallied. We're going to enjoy some beers now, and I hope that you've managed to get through a couple of cups of coffee or you've enjoyed your drive while listening to this. And we will be back. We will be discussing all the football in much more detail over the coming weeks, over the coming months, and gearing up for the start of 25-26, which I'm sure is going to fill us up with lots of optimism, and we're going to be very excited to discuss all of that with you. So on that, I'm going to say thank you very much for listening, guys, and have a great rest of your weekend. Have a good week wherever you're listening to this, and we will see you soon.
It's a pleasure, guys. Thank you very much.
Bye.